Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
Hey, 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 hey! We are back here in 2022. Wags and Scott with you here in the Toasted Tavern. I know it's been just a shade under a lot of time since we got a chance to talk to you guys. The holiday season hit us like a ton of bricks, and we are both incredibly busy, as was the sports world, and you know, sickness and holidays and all that stuff kind of combined to kind of delay our holiday return until tonight. But we are back. We are ready to go for the 2022 season. Lots of stuff going on in the world right now and in sports, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But Scott, it's been a while since we got a chance to talk to each other in person, per se, through the video screen. How was your holidays? How you feeling? And how excited are you for 2022?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It was a good holiday season. I had a bunch of family in town. Some family that lives up in the South Dakota area actually got into town for Christmas, which hadn't happened for a couple of years. So my whole family was together for the holidays, and we had a nice time. It was really good. Then right after Christmas, I got bronchitis really bad. So that's kicked my butt for about the last week and a half, but starting to feel better. And yeah, it's 2022, new year, lots of things to look forward to. I mean, you know, we're only, what, 4 weeks from the start of spring training. I mean, I'm really excited about the wait. No, we'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, you know, I mean, you know, we got, you know, NHL, the Winter Classic happened. We got that to talk about, college football to talk about, the playoffs in the NFL are starting. You know, it's a good time, man. Start of a new year, start of a new opportunities, and I'm excited.
Yeah, same here. And St. Louis City SC made a big announcement today, right, as well. We'll talk about that. Lots of stuff to talk about here in the Midwest, and hopefully you guys got a chance to check out some of our end of year and beginning of the year predictions as far as, you know, what we thought the top stories were and, you know, who are the breakout players that we look for this year are going to be. And if you haven't got a chance to check that out, make sure you head over to our WordPress site. Link is on our page as well. Make sure you check those out, and we'll have more articles and stuff coming this year. That's one of the big plans that we have for this year, is to become a lot more active in the writing world and just getting more stuff out there for you guys to, you know, hear us and hear our takes as well, as we continue to grow this show and this network that we're building to be a little bit bigger than what it was. So like I said, lots of stuff to talk about. I got the Blues in action tonight in Pittsburgh. The Penguins just tied this game up at 3 on a goal by Sidney Crybaby Crosby, although that is being looked at right now by the Blues bench. So we'll see how that goes. We'll keep you updated on that game as it progresses. And really, while we're talking about the Blues, let's dive into that Winter Classic, because this was 2 years in the making. And this was something that Blues fans and Wild fans were incredibly excited about. It was something that everybody was looking forward to. And it was a magical performance. I mean, the NHL did a great job putting it on. Minnesota did a great job as the host. The fans were great. It was a little chilly, just a little. I don't know if you got a chance to see the photos of the beers that were there. People were saying you couldn't even get the beer from the can to your mouth without freezing. But overall, just the entire experience of the Winter Classic was great. Even for those of us that didn't get a chance to go and watch it on TV, the Blues, a 6-4 victory in that game against the Minnesota Wild, a big 5-goal second period for the Blues. I got a chance to watch the entire game, which I was thrilled about. We got to see the emergence of Jordan Kyrou on the big stage. And just the fact that the Blues are now 2-0 in Winter Classics, you know, play all the games outside. Did you get a chance to watch it? And what were your thoughts and your reactions to that?
Yeah, I did watch it. It was awesome, man. You know, to get to play outside, you know, in real hockey weather. And I mean, third coldest sporting event to ever take place happened in that game. So for the Blues to be able to say that. And it was so cool to see them come out in their beach wear and get ready to go to the game and all of that stuff. And they had a lot of fun with it. Although I think my favorite picture, did you see the one picture of Ryan O'Reilly where he's on the ice? And you can literally see that his eyes are starting to like the water on his eyes are starting to freeze. It's like, that's amazing.
Oh, it was. And the frost on the beards of everybody. I mean, it was an incredible visual game. And credit to the photographers and the cameramen and the people that worked outside in those elements, keeping the equipment running and just keeping everybody safe and warm as best as they possibly can. And it was just a great experience. A fan of the show, Luke Widman, was out there freezing his tail off. enjoying that experience as a Blues fan living in Minnesota, somebody that's used to that experience. So it was just an overall great thing. And like I said earlier, it really kind of proved to be Jordan Kyrou's kind of coming out party to the NHL as a whole. Ended up nabbing the first star of the week in the NHL because he had a 4-point performance, all 4 points in that second period as part of a 7-point week. He had 3 points against Edmonton on Wednesday night as well. And there's not much more we can talk about Jordan Kyrou that hasn't already been said, at least on our show. But to the people that still don't really get a chance to see Kyrou on a regular basis, but what about him makes him so special? Is it the speed? Is it the skill? Is it a combination of both? Or is it something completely different that we're missing?
I think it's a combination of the two. It's the combination of the two. It's his youth. It's just all the, you know, we're finally seeing the potential that we've heard talked about for a couple of years now, all coming together. And it's fun to watch. You watch him and you watch Robert Thomas and you think, man, the future of this Blues team is really bright. And they've got a pretty big window. When you look at some of these young guys, when you talk about the two of them, guys like Scott Brnovich and some of these young kids coming up, you know, we talked about the Blues having a 4 or 5 year window. You have to start thinking about that window starting to expand a little bit, thinking, man, this could be one of those runs. Maybe the Blues are about to have one of those runs like the Cardinals had in the mid 2000s, where they're a constant championship contender.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They probably are. And if you're watching the game, it's kind of unraveling here in the third period. That goal by Sidney Crosby does count, even though he ran into Jordan Binnington's glove, knocked the puck out, and then put it in. Well, they challenged for goalie interference, lost that challenge, and then went to the penalty kill because you can't take that challenge without getting a penalty if you lose. Well, and the Penguins just scored on that power play to put them up 4-3. And this is just another one of those games, and I know I'm saying this as a Blues fan watching it, but something about the NHL's love affair with Sidney Crosby just rubs me the wrong way. I mean, he gets into a whacking match with Mikko Mikkola tonight, literally just taking his stick and just hacking the crap out of his legs. Mikkola not really responding too much. He kind of was pushing back a little bit, but Crosby two-handed whacks across his legs. And then finally Mikkola punches him in the face and cracks his, you know, nose up, but then they both get penalties. And it's just one of those things that you look at and you go, I mean, I know it's not collusion. I know it's not the refs going, oh, yeah, we're going to do this for Crosby. But there's just still something about this that just gives you the wrong feeling every time you watch a Penguins game that the league is in cahoots, essentially, with Sidney Crosby, always making sure he gets the better end of the stick, per se.
It's funny how the guys that are perceived as the faces of the leagues get those kind of things. It's the same kind of things we hear all the time with Tom Brady or, you know, people complain about when they go to Green Bay on a big game and play against Rodgers and the Packers, that those guys get the calls, and it happens in all the big sports. You know, how many times have we heard that with guys like LeBron when they're the so-called face of the league and you're playing in their place? It does seem that things go their way quite often.
You're playing not against just the team, but you're playing against the fans and the league as a whole. But the nice thing about the Blues team is they have a propensity for bouncing back this year. In the second period, when they gave up that first goal, Parayko comes back and scores just 19 seconds later to give the Blues a 3-1 lead. Yes, now the Penguins have scored three straight, but for some reason, you still get the feeling that the Blues have that ability to come back with the depth that they have. And you know, tonight's game marks that because they are now healthy for just the second time this season. This is the second time all year that they've had every single available forward ready to go for tonight's game. They had that a couple weeks ago, about a month or so ago, against Detroit when Oscar Sundquist came back. But in that game, Braden Schenn got injured. Well, Sundquist is just coming back from injury. Schenn gets injured. You can't even really count that for, you know, a healthy team. Well, tonight they have all these guys available. They're all skating. They're all healthy. And now you look at this team, and like you said, that window, it has kind of been busted wide open. And Doug Armstrong is right up against the cap. There's no question about that. They've had to do some maneuvering. And, you know, a guy like James Neal had to be put on waivers. He's now down in the taxi squad, which is a little surprising that no one picked him up to be a guy that they can put on their roster. A little surprised he made it through waivers. But now you've got a depth guy that has NHL experience, playoff experience, all of that stuff, sitting there on your taxi squad ready to go in case you need it. This team is deep, and like you said, that window's open. They're going to have to do something about this cap for sure. They're looking at guys like a Jacob Chychrun out of Arizona, and you're going to have to move some money in order to bring a guy like him in. Plus, you have to also look at, you know, what are you going to actually have to trade for a guy like Chychrun? And that's something we have some friends that we'd like to talk about here in the next couple weeks as we get closer to the deadline about that. But, you know, where do you see this team going as far as maneuvering money around. I mean, Vladimir Tarasenko is still on this team. It seems like the trade request is still there, but not necessarily a pressing need for Tarasenko to get out of here. He's a guy that you could potentially move if, you know, everything plays out the way you want it to play out, but I don't see that being the case as the Blues get called for yet another penalty. Go figure. Scandella is a guy that people are talking about potentially having him be moved if, you know, they make a move for Chychrun, something like that. But, you know, I mean, where do you see this team going to kind of alleviate that cap number here as we get closer to the trade deadline?
It's going to be really interesting. Like you said, that was the hot rumor today, was that Scandella and maybe a guy like Jake Neighbors and, you know, maybe a draft pick for Chychrun, something along those lines. You make a move like that. You know, everybody in St. Louis airwaves today was saying, you know, that this team is good enough that Army just needs to go all in and really make a run and try to win this cup this year with this team, because, you know, who knows what it's going to look like next year. And, you know, we don't know. As good as these guys have looked this year, are they all going to play like this, you know, every year? Is this a one-year type of a thing? So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do at the trade deadline. Do they go all in for a young defenseman like that from Arizona, you know, that could really be a piece for this team for years to come? Or did they go get one of the more salty veteran guys that's here to kind of solidify things for this year and make a run? You know, those are things that Army's going to have to figure out in the next couple of weeks, because the trade deadline, believe it or not, is not all that far away.
No, it's not. And you've also got what was the Olympic break, which is now not the Olympic break, because NHL's not sending players to the Olympics due to COVID protocols and things that are going along with that. So you're going to have some games sprinkled in throughout that 3-week period with the pause that they had right before Christmas. You're going to see some of those games being played during that time frame as well. And then, yeah, like you said, you're going to have to basically make some trade decisions based on a few games played in February leading up to that deadline. So how's that going to play out? Who do you move? Who do you look at moving? Do you pull that trigger on a guy like Tarasenko, who's having a great year this year? He's got 14 goals this year. He's one of the team leaders in points. He's playing a team game. He looks excited to play here. You know, do you capitalize on that if you can? And if you can't, is he going to stay this way past the trade deadline when he knows that, okay, maybe he is playing for a trade right now, but if he doesn't get dealt, does that attitude change? Personally, I don't think it does. I think he plays at the same level regardless of where he's at the trade deadline, because it really seems like he absolutely loves playing in St. Louis. It's not about the city or anything like that. It is about the injury history and things of that nature. But does that change a little bit? Is this team able to kind of go back on a run? I mean, they started the season off hot. They slumped a little bit in November. Obviously, the game against Minnesota in Minnesota was a big one. They beat an Edmonton team that, let's just be honest, is not a playoff team, as much as people want to continue to make them out to be a playoff team. But they're getting ready to go through a really tough stretch of the schedule as well. So are they going to be able to stay hot? Is this team going to be able to gel now that these guys are healthy? Are they going to be able to stay healthy? There's just so many questions as we get closer to that trade deadline. It's going to be real interesting to see how Doug Armstrong plays it off.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But, you know, you look at this Blues team, and when was the last time ever in your fanhood have you looked at a Blues team and been this deep at forward where you're like, my God, look at all of these guys can score 30 goals. I mean, it's just, I don't remember a Blues team where you looked at it and went, they have so many threats offensively on this team right now.
I can't even begin to tell you. I really can't, because I don't think there ever was a time where this team had this many productive forwards. That's the thing. I mean, you usually had maybe a top line, maybe even a top two lines, but you never had a team that could roll four lines that could score. I mean, you're looking at right now, you've got four guys, or I'm sorry, not just four. You've got five guys with 10 goals or more. You got Tarasenko at the top with 14, Kyrou, Barbashev, and Saad at 12 apiece, and Buchnevich at 11. Perron's got 8. He missed some time due to health. O'Reilly's got 5. He hasn't really gotten going too much, but he is more of an assist kind of guy. He's more of a guy that sets things up. And then you're starting to see the contributions from the defense. Torrey Krug, Justin Falk both have 5 goals. Torrey Krug had 1 goal last year. People were freaking out, and I go back to this argument. Had the same conversation when Justin Falk's first year. It takes a little while to get going, and we're seeing that Krug is producing at the level that I think we expected him to produce at. 5 goals, 12 assists this year. He's still not going to be a stellar defender. That's not what they brought him in for. They didn't bring him in to be Petro Jr. in a sense. But he's doing what he's doing. Shen has been injured, but he's got 4 goals this year. I mean, hell, you got Nathan Walker with 4 goals. Robert Thomas is sitting there, 3 goals. You have a 22 assists. He's a magician with the puck. He's a guy that's going to be just getting people put in a position the entire season. And that's not even to sit there and say you got, you know, a veteran in Tyler Bozak. You've got Oscar Sundquist down there. Scott Perunovic hasn't even scored a goal yet this year. That's the one that's going to be the big icebreakers. Once he scores a goal, holy cow, this might open up the defense even more. They're one of the top teams in the league in defenseman goal scoring. So it's setting up to be really, really, really good as the Blues now have a 5-on-3 that they need to kill for 13 seconds as we get near the end of this game. Yeah, not great for the Blues in Pittsburgh, but we'll see how it plays out. Like you said, it is setting up to be a good run, but they're on a very competitive Western Conference. They're sitting up there near the top with Nashville, with Minnesota. Colorado has not really been able to fire on all cylinders just yet. They're getting close. Did you see that goal by Kale McCarr last night on Kirby Dach?
I did. Yes, I did. That was impressive.
I mean, you got to compete with that on the defensive side. Colorado is poised to blow up. Dallas is starting to play very, very well. So, you know, the Blues have to get the points that they can when they can, but they also have to be healthy and ready to go and compete against the teams in the Western Conference and really take the points that they need to take when they play these Pacific Division teams, because that's where the bread and butter is going to have to be at. They're going to have to get points against the Pacific Division and not give up points, because the other teams that they are in their division with are going to collect when they can.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It's going to be really interesting. And before we move on real quick, kind of a side note, and I just thought of it because you talked about Dallas, and we haven't been together since it happened, but want to send congratulations on a great career to a great NHL player in the St. Louis, and then Ben Bishop, who unfortunately his career came to an end a couple of weeks ago. And what a story career he had, and hope he enjoys his retirement. But just wanted to take a second and say thanks, and enjoyed watching a St. Louis kid have a really good, stellar career in the NHL.
Oh, yeah. And when they were in here for St. Louis, and when Dallas was in here visiting St. Louis, the Blues did a nice gesture. A former player on their team gave him a nice shout out while he's in the box. Good round of applause from the fans. Everything class act as far as that's concerned. And yeah, Ben Bishop was a goalie that you did not want to go up against. I mean, we didn't get to see his best when he was in St. Louis. He wasn't here that long because of the whole Halak and Ryan Miller and all that mess of goaltending that was that time frame. But what he did in Ottawa was great. What he did in Dallas, and he's one of those guys that you look at and you go, man, you wish he had a chance to win a Stanley Cup. He had an opportunity. He got a chance to go to the finals, but really didn't get a chance to play in that finals. And, you know, you look at it, and he's going to probably get it somewhere, whether it's coaching or as part of an organization at some point. Maybe he comes back with the Blues because they do a great job of bringing guys back. But he's a guy that you look at and you go, man, you wish he could have been able to get that ring and that cup, but he still had a hell of a career. He's one of the best goaltenders in the last 15 years, and it was a great career, and it was a joy to have him as part of the Blues organization. I remember going to see his first game and just going, holy shit, this dude is tall. Yeah. He was a big goaltender, but he wore it well, and he moved very, very well. He's a guy you did not want to face in net, and you know, I think Colton Parayko may have broken him a little bit in that Western Conference series, but it was the knee eventually that took him down. And unfortunately, the career is over, but we wish him the best. And, you know, Ben, if you ever get a chance to listen to the show, we'd love to have you on for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be a great honor to have him on.
It sure would, as we are now under 2 minutes in this Blues game, and Penguins just scored to go up 5-3, so it looks like the Penguins are going to end up winning this game. Yeah, that's not a great way to come out of the Winter Classic, but you know what? A team on the road after a big hoopla event like that, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. You woke the beast in Crosby, and unfortunately, the Blues ended up paying for it, and they're going to end up losing this game 5-3. When you're getting outshot by almost 20 shots, too, you know, it just shows you that the Penguins really kind of handled this game after that outburst in the second period by the Blues. So it is what it is, and we'll see them back in action Friday night against Washington. And once again, Colton Parayko kind of whiffs on a clearing attempt there. He had a bit of a rough game despite the goals. So that one's going to wrap up here, and then we'll wrap up our talk about the Blues unless – my shot in the dark worked out. I reached out to Chris Kerber on Twitter because he is in COVID protocol right now.
Right.
Just sitting alone. Well, not alone. He's got his daughters in his basement because they are part of it as well. And maybe he might jump on near the end of the show. We'll see. He hasn't responded, but I'm sure he's been watching the game, so I'm not going to sit there and judge him if he's not on Twitter. But we may, you know, we may circle back to the Blues, but we have to talk a little bit about St. Louis City SC. Today they made a huge announcement in their franchise. It is a big deal because this team is going to get underway here in about a year. Training camp for MLS opens at the end of January, so we are about a month and a couple weeks, or a year and a couple weeks away from the start of St. Louis City SC's time in the MLS, and they made their first really big move today by unveiling the first head coach in team history, Bradley Carnell. I know it's not a name, and I know a lot of people on here probably aren't soccer fans either, but it's a name that a lot of people may not know, but it's a name you should know, because this guy is a legit star in the making in the coaching ranks. He's from South Africa. He played in Germany in the Bundesliga, played for the South African team. He spent a lot of time with Lutz, who's the scouting director for City SC. This is the guy that they wanted. Clear as day, they wanted him. And there's a reason why. He's been with the Red Bulls in New York for the last 5 years. He was an interim head coach for them in 2020, helped actually lead them to the playoffs in 2020. He's studied under current Manchester United head coach Ralf Rangnick. In fact, Manchester United was one of those teams that was rumored to be in on bringing him into the fold there. Maybe not as the head coach, but as part of the coaching staff. Multiple MLS teams were in on him as well. But St. Louis City SC knew they wanted to get him. They went out, they got him, and they announced him today. And I tell you what, everything I've heard as far as the press conference is concerned, they got their guy. They got the right guy. And I'm excited for soccer here in 2023.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, definitely an up and comer from everything I've heard. You know, didn't hear anything but a lot of praise from anybody that talked about him today and what he's done. And heard a couple of interviews with him, you know, after his initial press conference. He kind of made the media tour and heard a bunch of people talking to him. And he seems very excited to be in St. Louis, seemed to have a real understanding of the soccer history in the city, and seem to be really excited about this. And so, yeah, it's an exciting day because, like you said, we are just a little over a year away. And once you bring that coach in and you start talking about, man, we're just a year away from training camp, it finally starts to seem real because, man, it seems like it's been a long time since we got the team and, you know, COVID pushed everything back. But, yeah, it's finally just right around the corner. And, you know, I drive downtown all the time and see the progress at the stadium and the team store and all the complex, everything. It's going to be exciting. I can't wait to actually get down there and, you know, a little over a year and actually see everything. It's going to be pretty amazing when it actually gets underway down there.
Yeah, they are getting ready. They're going to open it up this year. It's going to be something that they're going to use probably a little bit for some of these U16, right, U17 teams, potentially, maybe even hosting like a World Cup qualifier or a women's game or something of that nature. So there will be some use to it. They got the great Slafly brewery building that's going to be right there that, you know, fans are going to be able to go to. I'm excited. I'm a part of the supporter section, so I've got my two tickets ready to go for 23. I'm ready to stand, yell, scream, cheer, do whatever is needed to do to cheer on our team. And this is just one of the many big announcements that are going to be coming this year. First is the head coach. We still got a kit that needs to come out. We still got to see what that looks like. We still need a lot of naming rights for a bunch of different things. You're going to have your first player signing, things of that nature. But also get out there and start to see some of these younger teams. You know, they're going to be the MLS next team that's coming up, which is the second tier. You've got the U16, 17 teams out there playing already. So go out there, start to see what the future is going to look like, because a lot of these kids are going to eventually feed up into this main club. And there are a lot of local kids out there, so make sure you go check that out for sure. Stick around, follow the St. Louis City SC app. It's a beautiful app. It's one of the most immersive, fan-friendly apps I've ever seen. And I think the Blues are getting ready to come out with their own that's mirroring it. So Make sure you check that out as well. But get excited for soccer. You may not know a whole lot about it, but there's a lot of great bars and taverns in the area that are big into soccer. Make sure you get to Amsterdam Tavern for sure. Check out some of these, you know, these Premier League games. Check out some Bundesliga, some La Liga. Just get some knowledge of sport, of soccer, because once this thing hits next year, it's going to be a freight train going forward, and you're going to want to be a part of it, because if you're a Blues fan, you're going to have that same sort of experience, that same sort of just that fandom, that camaraderie, that just excitement that you get at a Blues game. You're going to get that with St. Louis City SC in soccer. But you're also going to get that culture and that history that the Cardinals bring to this the city as well. Yes, the soccer team is only going to be around for like 30 days, essentially, before they start the season. But they're already starting to build that history and that community that the Cardinals have right now. So it's just another piece to this St. Louis City sports scene. Try to say that 10 times fast. And just get involved with it as much as you possibly can, because it's going to be a lot of fun. And you can do a lot of crazy fun things at the soccer game.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting experience. And, you know, just to have another sports team in town and the excitement it's going to bring to downtown, the new businesses, the influx of people, it's just going to be a good thing for the city. And that's an exciting thing to talk about. We've talked about really two really positive things with teams in the area. Now we can talk about the other thing.
I was trying to avoid it.
I know. We have to, though. We have to. I mentioned it when the show started. We should be, you know, about 5 weeks from the start of pitchers and catchers arriving in spring training. But there's some big question marks going on with when and if spring training starts. I shouldn't say if, because spring training is going to happen. Is it going to happen in 5 weeks? I don't know. I don't know. We may see, you know, I was listening to Danny Mac today, and he's pretty confident, as am I, that, you know, we're going to get a full 162-game season. I really don't think that we're going to see a shortened season. Do I think we're going to get a full spring training? At this point, I kind of doubt it. I have a feeling we're going to see a crazy end of February, first part of March, and everybody's going to panic and go, oh, my God, we got to get to spring training. But wait, there's still 3,000 players that aren't signed yet. You know, I think the end of February, first part of March is probably going to be absolutely nuts, because I think you're just going to have pandemonium, because you're going to get this thing done, and then, you know, it's going to be the wild, wild west, because you're going to have all these players that haven't signed and trying to get players. Think about that. Think about all the players from, like, the Dominican and all those places that have to get visas and have to get cleared to come back into the country to be able to play. It's going to be insane. Those two or three weeks or month of whatever spring training is, trying to get everybody to new places and get teams set up. And I don't really like it. I think it's ridiculous that we've gotten to this point, that we're 5 weeks into this lockout and they still haven't sat down and how do you not have talked yet? Like, how do neither side go, oh yeah, no, we don't really need to talk. Nothing really to talk about. No, I don't know. We'll be fine. It'll happen. You know, and my fear is, and I have a feeling that this is what's going on right now, is that you have those small market owners, the owners in places like Pittsburgh and Kansas City that don't spend money, in Oakland that aren't spending money, going, hey, you know what? COVID's acting up again. It really wouldn't be that big of a deal for us if we have a shortened season, because fans might not be able to go in the ballparks anyway. So, you know, let's just drag this thing out. You know, we don't have to play the players. You know, we'll drag it out till May. Surely there's somebody smart enough in the Players Association or in the owners somewhere that realizes that you can't do that to the fans again. I mean, you just can't. I mean, I realize that it's a business and that everybody wants to make money, and, you know, that's all that some of the owners really care about. But, you know, while some people will say baseball is not the same as it used to be, it's still the nation's pastime. The game's still growing. You look at the numbers. You look at the amount of people that have gone to ballparks and the people that are watching the game. The game's actually growing at a pretty good pace. You know, it truly is. And so you got to figure out a way to get this settled and get in there and get this game back on track. You cannot throw this away and go, oh, look, I don't know what we're doing. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And I know I'm rambling right now, but it's just because I'm frustrated. But, you know, I mean, you're 5 weeks in, and the only thing that Rob Manfred's been able to figure out in 5 weeks is that he wants to get rid of Ken Rosenthal from MLB Network. That was his main goal in these 5 weeks. That was the only thing that he really thought he needed to take care of.
Well, I mean, it's Christmas. I mean, it Bob Cratchit and Ebenezer Scrooge. I mean, that's the theme of the holidays, right? And it's Manfred's the Scrooge. He wanted to get rid of Cratchit as much as he possibly could, and he did, which – I mean, the amount of support that Ken Rosenthal has gotten is beyond words. I mean, I don't even understand what happened. I mean, if you can't be critical of somebody, then you have no business being in that spot to be criticized. I mean, if you're that thin skinned that you can't take it, what was it? David Aldridge had a great tweet the other day, and he goes, look, I criticize David Stern all the time, and he got pissed. But you know what he did? He called me, he cussed me out, and that's all I did. He didn't go to my bosses and say, hey, this guy needs to go because he criticized me. He called up the guy who did it, said, I don't agree with you, bleep, 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 and that was it. And I guarantee you that David Stern respected David Aldridge, and David Aldridge respected David Stern. And that's just the way it should be. I mean, you got to be critical. You have to take that criticism, and then you have to be able to let it fall off your back. And that's something that in this day and age just doesn't happen. You know, everybody is so thin-skinned about it. It's like, look, nobody is perfect, okay? I've done a lot of stupid shit. Don't get me wrong. I mean, last year especially, things happened that, you know, it is what it is. But you take it, you learn from it, you grow from it. And in fact, sometimes you can even go back and say, look, I repaired fences. I fixed this, or maybe we didn't, but now things are better than it ever was. So you got to just kind of take that and let it roll off your back. That's not what Rob Manfred did. He goes, look, someone criticized me. Huh, I'm going to show you the door because I'm the boss. I am the one in power. Didn't the owners hire you? So, you know, you're not technically in power. You just happen to be the mouthpiece for the owners, despite the commissioner label. That whole setup is just, I think, a little bit wrong. And I think that's why you're seeing the lockout progress the way it has. Nobody having any conversations, because I guarantee you that the majority of players want to come to the table, but they don't trust the people that are going to be talking across at them from the other table. So why even go to a negotiation if you already know what the reaction is going to be? Because it's not like the commissioner's impartial. He is the mouthpiece of the owners. And the owners, like you said, COVID's, it's ramping up. We're seeing up in Canada with hockey. No fans in attendance in Canada. What's that going to do to the Blue Jays this year? That's another big question. Yes, they have the Buffalo situation, but they want to play in Toronto. The fans in Toronto want to see the Blue Jays. Right. So there's all of that going on. And when you've got a commissioner like Manfred, who's, I mean, I don't want to sit there and say he's destroying the game, because I don't think he's actively trying to destroy the game, but a lot of the things he's doing are really putting people off. And I think you're right. I think fans will be put off in droves if this thing, you know, lasts until May. And the players, I think the players are smart enough to know that it can't last until May, and that they're going to have to at some point maybe just concede. But after all the work that they put in, this is shades of 2020 all over again. You're seeing this happen again. And the players are going to eventually have to cave, because the owners hold too much power and the commissioner holds too much power. That's really what it comes down to.
And that's what Brad Thompson, you know, talking about listening to other stations around the area. Brad Thompson was talking about that today. Jamie Rivers flat out asked him, said, what do the players have? You know, because the players union used to be really strong. The last couple of negotiations, they kind of whittled away their power and gave up too much. And Brad Thompson said it. He said, basically, the only thing the players have is to not play. That's basically the only leverage that they have at this point, is to not play. And, you know, they don't want to do that. They're the ones that are not getting paid if they don't play. You know, the owners are still going to make money, because, you know, most of the owners don't, their revenue doesn't necessarily come from baseball. You know, they're all billionaires and they have other sources of income and other things. And, you know, like we said, some of those small market teams are pretty much tax write-offs more than anything else, is why they own some of those teams. You know, so at some point, you're right, they're going to have to come together, and the players are probably going to have to swallow their pride a little bit. You know, but it's got to get done for the good of the game, because, like you said, you know, everybody's saying, you know, nobody's talking about it right now. Well, nobody's really talking about the fact that there's a lockout, because, you know, we're not missing games. You're not missing spring training. When you get to that point, that's when fans are going to get frustrated. People that have vacations planned to go to Florida and spend their vacations in Florida. I have a bunch of family, aunts and uncles and stuff, that they spend the whole month of February in Jupiter. You know, their whole, you know, that's, you know, and they've done it for years. You know, that's when people are going to get upset, when there's no spring training, when opening day doesn't happen, when, you know, and some of those fans that you got back in 98, and it took a long time to get a lot of fans back, but we've heard this a million times, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa aren't walking through that door again to fix everything. You know, it's not going to happen again. So you can't let it get to the point that it got to in 90, you know, in 95, when there was no, but, you know, I mean, the only time, think about that. That's the only time we've never had a World Series. During World War I, during World War II, we had a World Series the strike in 94 is the only time the World Series got stopped. I mean, you just can't let that happen again. I don't know that the game can recover from it this time. You know, just the world's changed too much in so many different ways. And it's a shame because there's so many great athletes in the game of baseball right now. I mean, you've got maybe the best young crop of athletes in the game that you had in a long, long time. Just how unbelievably athletic some of these guys are. And the talent, you know, they need to be showcased. And, you know, right now you can't even go to MLB.com and see their images. You know, it's crazy.
And they're all spread out, too. It's not like they're concentrated on the Yankees or the Dodgers or anything like that. There are lots of young talent across the entire league. And you've got, you know, Seattle's got guys that are up and coming. You've got Miami. You've got these smaller, like you said, smaller market teams. I mean, we looked at Kansas City. Bobby Witt was one of those guys that we thought was going to have a breakout year this year. Is he going to be able to have a breakout year this year if Major League Baseball doesn't play ball, essentially? Right. And, you know, you talk a little bit about, you know, the players not, you know, the only leverage they have is not to play. Well, it's the big-time stars, the guys that had the big contracts, they're the ones that can afford not to play. You know, they're the ones that had the big contracts. They've invested money. It's the lower-tier players. It's the minor league players, although the minor league players I think probably will still get to play because this is just affecting the Major League roster. So more than go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, you can't be on the 40-man.
So,
like, for the Cardinals, for instance, a guy like Nolan Gorman can go to spring training. Some of those other guys that are on the 40-man, Juan Yepes cannot. So, you know, you've got some of your prospects that would be able to go to spring training and everything would be fine. Other guys wouldn't be able to go. So, yeah, it does affect those guys who are trying to make a living, trying to, you know, their first couple of years of actually being able to make some money after struggling, you know. I mean, they're still kids, of course. But, you know, and people say, oh, they're professional athletes, yeah. But go take a look at how minor league kids live, because it ain't luxurious, let me tell you.
Well, that's going to be part of the CBA is the negotiations of being able to treat minor league players better.
It absolutely is. But the average fan doesn't understand that. They just think professional athlete, oh, they've got it made, blah, blah, blah. And it's not the truth. And, you know, and that's something the players are fighting for, too, is just that the minimum wage of baseball goes up. Because while we say, you know, $500,000, yeah, that's a lot of money. And it is. I'm not trying to say that it's not. But when, you know, 10% of the league's making $30 million and the other 70's making under $400 million, you've got to figure out a way to fix that, too, because it's broken. Just the financials of the game are completely out of whack. And you've got to find a way to make it fair for everybody. And that's kind of what the players union wants to do right now. And the owners are like, eh, man, not necessarily something we want to look at.
Yeah, because they're going to lose money in that sense because baseball is not a money-making endeavor, except the fact that you signed a bunch of guys to $250,000 in contracts before the lockout. That's the thing that drove me nuts was the amount of money that was spent. But we talked about that before. We don't need to hash that. So this is the one question I have to ask you, okay? Now, I believe it was during Bud Selig's tenure that the lockout happened that canceled the World Series. But
it was.
Do we miss Bud Selig's leadership?
Oh, God.
That's a tough question, I know.
You know, Bud did some good things. I mean, there were a lot of things that Bud kind of turned his back to and just kind of ignored and hoped they'd pushed under the rug. He did do some good things. You know, the game definitely prospered and bounced back and started to grow again under Bud Selig. You know, I can't honestly tell you one good thing that Rob Manfred has done for the game of baseball since he's become the manager or become the
commissioner. Sorry. Yeah.
Commissioner. There's the word I'm looking for. I couldn't even remember what his title is.
Hey, it's been a while. It's been a while for us. So yeah, we're getting back into the swing of things.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, he's a guy that doesn't even seem to really care about the game of baseball. You know, he really doesn't. It almost seems, and a lot of people have said this, it almost feels like Rob Manfred doesn't like baseball. And they've got to figure out a way to fix that. You know, that's a big PR problem right there in itself. But hopefully we can get this figured out. And, you know, hopefully we are talking spring training in 3 or 4 weeks because there's a bunch of guys out there that are free agents that I want to see in Cardinal uniforms here in 4 or 5 weeks, to be honest with you. I think this team's still got a real good shot of winning this division. Going to talk something positive for a second, but I think you're going to see, I really do, I honestly believe that you're either going to see Kyle Schwarber or Trevor Story. I think one of those two guys ends up a Cardinal. And the only reason I say that is I think Paul DeJong may get traded for a pitcher. And it may be somebody that you don't expect. It may be – this is going to sound weird. I'm going to throw this out there. I would not be 100% shocked if we saw Paul DeJong playing in Chicago for the White Sox and we saw a certain closer that sometimes looks like a bird wearing a Cardinal uniform. It would not shock me.
Really? Really? I mean – yeah, why? I mean, why would you see that being an option?
Because the White Sox need a middle infielder. They're looking for a middle infield bat. And the Cardinals have made it pretty clear that they're looking for a closer, a guy that's got some experience. We saw how good Craig Kimbrell was again with the Cubs, and he was pretty solid even with the White Sox down the stretch. If you trade him for DeJong, the money's going to pretty much even out. You know, you make that switch, pretty much an even trade, one for one. And then you have that money that you can still turn around and go get a guy like Trevor Story. Or you could add another, you can add a Kyle Schwarber. You can make that move. You fix your bullpen. And I mean, as much as we've talked about, the Cardinal bullpen is in good shape. And I like Gallegos and I like Hennessy Cabrera and I like Jordan Hicks. Imagine if you added, and it doesn't have to be Craig Kimbrell, but imagine if you had all of those guys and then you had Craig Kimbrell in that mix as well. I mean,
that would be pretty impressive.
I mean, they could pretty much turn it into a five-inning game at that point every night.
And the Cardinals did an amazing thing by going out and getting John Lester. And, you know, maybe he can start singing the praises of St. Louis and the Cardinals organization. And that'd be another former Cubs / Red Sox that came in here that was a mortal enemy that may end up proving to be a key piece to another championship run. How badly would that hurt Cubs fans if that were to be the case?
Well, imagine, again, think about this. Think if the Cardinals went and got Craig Kimbrell and then they signed Kyle Schwarber. And then they won the – that would that not just destroy the Cubs?
It probably would. I mean, it very well would. I could see that being the case. Oh, man.
I'd love to see Kyle Schwarber be the leadoff hitter on this ball club. You know, the way the guy hits the ball out of the ballpark, plus the way he gets on base being left-handed. If you imagine going up against the Cardinals and you go, okay, playing the Cardinals today, what's that batting order look like? Oh, it's Schwarber, Goldschmidt, Arenado, O'Neill, Carlson,
Bader, Molina,
Gorman. Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I'll be perfectly honest. I mean, it would definitely throw into the face of traditional Cardinals leadoff men. I mean, you're thinking on base percentage, you're thinking of walks, slap singles, that sort of thing. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and say that a guy like Mark Grzelanik is a Kyle Schwarber in a sense, but I mean, that's the last guy I can really remember that wasn't that prototypical leadoff guy for the Cardinals, a guy that had pop, a guy left-handed batter, obviously, like a guy that really wasn't the on-base kind of guy. He was more of that little guy with pop and could, you know, make some stuff happen. But once again, I'm not saying Grzelanik and Schwarber are the same player, but it's that same sort of mindset and mold that the Cardinals haven't really put out there for a while. I mean, you had Carlson up there for a little bit, and I think he could do that, but he's not a leadoff hitter in my mind. But having a guy like Kyle Schwarber up there, yeah, I mean, that you want to frighten. I talked about it all the time. You want a pitcher to get out there on the mound and go, damn, I do not want to face this guy. And if that guy can be the very first guy you put out there, that sets up the rest of the lineup to be like, oh shit, I gotta go from him to him to him. Like you said, it's just a murderer's row, essentially, starting from the very first guy. Now, yes, maybe you don't have a guy on base in front of Goldschmidt or an Arenado, but if you have a Goldschmidt and an Arenado hitting, Kyle Schwarber's not going to get pitched around because they don't want to pitch to those other guys either. So no. It sets things up so nicely. And then if you've got a guy like Kimbrel in the back of that bullpen, you can slot it down to a five-inning game. You don't have to put as much pressure on your starting rotation. On paper, it sets everything up the way you want it to be set up. But unfortunately, you don't play the games on paper. But I will take that team to the bank every time if that's how it ends up shaking out.
Yeah, no. And, you know, I would even say – you know, talking about Schwarber and Cardinal leadoff hitters, I would say you could almost make a comparison to Kyle Schwarber. The Kyle Schwarber now and Matt Carpenter of 2013, 2014, as far as being able to draw walks and hitting extra base hits, the difference is Carpenter had 50 doubles. Schwarber might hit 40 home runs. I mean, there's a little bit more pop, but the same type of guy. You know, not speed-wise, but he's going to walk. And he's got the threat of being in scoring position every time he comes up to the plate.
And it'll only enhance things if the DH is something that is part of the CBA negotiations, because then you don't have to necessarily put him out in the outfield if you don't want to. That's a whole other can of worms, because then if you have that, the possibility of an Albert reunion comes into play. And you know what? We won't get into that because things haven't been negotiated yet. One other final negative note as far as the lockout is concerned, it's the one that hurts us a lot because we were looking forward to it yet again. Winter warm-up was canceled again this year. Another blow to Cardinals fans in the St. Louis area. It was going to be big this year because they were going to have it over at Ballpark Village. It was going to be a big-time event. People were going to be out. We were going to be there. I know. I mean, everybody was coming out to see us anyway. Right. So yep. Who knows? But, yeah, the fact that winter warm-up got canceled just makes you once again sit there and go, come on, MLB, figure this thing out.
Yeah. You know, and while winter warm-up is huge and all the people in St. Louis, it also affected the caravan, which was huge for people all over the Midwest because, you know, that thing went to, you know, Southeast Missouri, Southwest Missouri, Oklahoma, Illinois. I mean, you and I got to experience that down in Southeast Missouri a few years ago, all the people that came out to see that. And, you know, that's something the Cardinal fans all over the Midwest look forward to every year. And so that gets taken away from those fans that don't always get to come to St. Louis, and that might be the only time they get to see a Cardinal player or a Cardinal announcer that for that year is when they make those trips to those places. So it's just a huge, huge bummer for Cardinal fans everywhere and baseball fans everywhere. And let's just hope that, you know, like we said, in 5 or 6 weeks, we're talking about spring training and this is all just a bad memory and we're looking forward to baseball in summertime.
That would be the absolute goal for sure. So plenty more to come as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. We'll keep you updated as much as we can. Let's talk a little bit about football. We got college and the NFL to talk about. Let's start with college because that's going to be a little bit more pressing because the national championship game is coming up on the 10th. And surprise, surprise, it's a rematch of the SEC title game between Alabama and Georgia. Did we really expect anything different when this came out? I think the biggest thing for me was the fact that Cincinnati actually kind of kept it close for the most part against Alabama. I wouldn't say that they, you know, set the recipe for beating Alabama for Georgia, but I think I was a little bit impressed with the fact that Cincinnati kept it as close as they did, as long as they did. We knew Alabama was going to win that game. It was really a matter of what Cincinnati showed us. And yes, they only scored, 6 points? So it's not like they went out there and threw the ball all over the place, scored points. But they did enough to sit there and say, okay, the Power Five, they're coming. They're going to be there. It's going to be a point where you're going to have one of those teams in there and they're going to do some damage. On the flip side, you look at what Georgia did to Michigan and you go, wow, yeah, we were right. Michigan probably didn't even need to be in that Final Four. They just got there by happenstance. Yes, they beat an Ohio State team that had basically all they could handle it with Utah in that bowl game, but that's because players weren't playing. All bunch of different stories. But when it comes down to it, it's Alabama, Georgia once again. Alabama ran away with that title game a couple of weeks ago to put them at number one. I'd like to sit there and say Georgia learned from that, that they are prepared and they're ready to go up against Alabama and have a chance of beating them. But, I mean, it's Nick Saban. He's got the same amount of time as Georgia does to prepare. They're going to get healthy again. They've got some of the top players in the league. They've got Heisman guys. I mean, this is Alabama's game to lose once again. And, I mean, I expect it to be closer, but I just don't see how the Crimson Tide don't win the national championship.
I'm going to be totally honest. I'm not even interested. I'm not even sure I'm going to watch this game. I'm just done with it. I mean, you know, those playoff games were boring. They really were. I mean, Cincinnati's defense put up a pretty good fight. They kept themselves in it. Michigan got totally destroyed by Georgia. You know, and that's a shame because Michigan had a really good year. They looked good. You know, they thought maybe this was the year that they could at least make a little bit of a run. And so I have no idea what to expect in this national championship game. I think you're right. I think Alabama wins big because Kirby Smart's not been able to beat Nick Saban yet at Georgia. He's 0 for whatever it is, 10 now or something like that. You know, and Saban's going to be prepared, and Georgia's offense isn't that explosive. You know, they've got to try to shut Alabama's offense down and keep it close because they're not going to blow people away. that's just not how their offense is built. They don't have those kind of weapons at Georgia this year. Their defense has to play really good, and they have to, you know, kind of dominate on that side of the ball. Not sure they're going to be able to do it. I'm afraid Bama wins again. And like I said, I'm over Alabama at this point. You know, it's just like, I mean, come on. We've seen – it's like a broken record. It's pretty much the same way I felt about the Patriots. You know, it's like, okay, I've seen this before. I'm done with it. I would love to say I think college playoffs need to expand, except we're going to see the same thing happen over and over and over again. You know, I don't know how you fix it, but I think college football has a problem because, like I said, who was watching either one of those games by the third quarter? And, you know, on New Year's Eve, you know, people tuned out. You know,
pretty much, and
there's going to be a lot of people that are going to tune out to the championship game, I'm afraid, just because it is. It's Georgia and Alabama again, and if Bama gets out to a big lead, people are going to be like, I've seen this before. You know, I don't need to see it again. And I don't know what college football does about that because, you know, the landscape of college football could change because of all of the transfer portal and the money that's in college football, although I'm not sure – just watching all these kids transfer and bounce around, I'm not sure this is going to be good for college football. It may be the death of college football, to be totally honest with you. I hope I'm wrong. But, you know, just look what happened in Oklahoma in the last couple of weeks. You had Spencer Rattler transfer out, and then the kid that comes in and plays that game, plays a game, pretty good game, helps them win, and goes, hey, you know what? I could probably go somewhere else and make some money, so I'm going to transfer out to Oklahoma now too. And that's just what's going to happen. You know, kids going to play well. Programs are going to be able to build because kids are going to go, hey, you know what? I'm going to go somewhere else and make money. And, you know, I'm just not sure it's a good thing for – I'm not sure it's a good thing for the kids. I'm not sure it's a good thing for college football. I know that athletes had to find a way to get paid and we had to do some different things. But I'm not sure that we did the right thing here either for the kids or the sport.
See, I think the NIL thing is something that needed to happen. I think it definitely needed to happen. I mean, you saw how it affected college football and college sports in the mid and early 2000s with Ohio State, Maurice Claret, all that kind of stuff. I think the NIL stuff needed to happen. But I think you're hitting the nail right on the head as far as the transfer portal is concerned. You know, what do we talk about when a coach gets to a program? It takes 3 years for our coach's program to, you know, be put into effect, recruit, get his guys in there, get them trained up, get them into the system, get things flowing the right way before you probably see success. But exactly like you said, you got guys that can transfer at the drop of a hat, essentially. Now, it's not good for the athletes because they're going to go from one system to another system to another system. If they don't like it, they're going to get a chance to move. They're not going to be able to grow. You know, you got to be in a system to grow. And, yeah, maybe you get there and the system's not what you thought it was going to be and you need to get out of there. But that's also the other part of the coin, too. Coaches need to not be able to move. Right. They need to be held accountable for the contracts they sign. I mean, you need to sit there and say, if you're going to sign an 8-year contract, you're going to be there for 8 years unless the school decides to fire you. And that's another tricky subject because a school can just go, hey, yeah, we'll pay the money and get you out of there. But right. – You know, you're not doing the coaches any favors. You're not doing the players any favors. You're not doing the institutions any favors. It's a mess that I think is completely wrong in a sense. I mean, why are college football coaches the highest paid public servants in almost every state? It's right. Something that should not be the case. That money should be reinvested in the schools, education, and get everybody up to a level that we should be at. But if you're going to want, if you really want college football to succeed and you really want these programs to be built and all that kind of stuff, you know, keep the NIL for sure. And you already saw what happened with the number one recruit going down to play for Deion.
Right.
That makes sense. That should be the case. If you feel like you can go to a school, be the guy and get the money, that's what you should do. But if he goes down there and plays 1 year and then he decides to transfer somewhere else, no, maybe you lose that money or maybe you lose your right to have your the money coming in for the next year to whatever school you transfer to. I mean, I don't think you can actually do that, but like there should be some penalties for that as well. But it should also be the same thing for the coaches. Like you can't just sit there and go, I signed an eight year deal last year. 1 year in, you know what? LSU just opened up. See you later. Bye. I mean, there's got to be some accountability on all sides. And I think you're right. The NCAA screwed up majorly with all this stuff. And it's going to be real hard to put everything back in Pandora's box. I think you're about ready to see a split in college sports as far as the NCAA and the big institutions. And it's going to be a mess for the next couple of years. And I just feel sorry for some of these kids that are getting ready to enter these colleges and this time frame of sports in college, where it may not prove to be the best years of their lives.
Right. Well, and you know, there's so many things that are going to happen, because, you know, with all these endorsements, and while, like I said, you know, I totally understand the kids, college athletes need to make money, and some of these kids come from really bad families and stuff. What's going to happen to some of these 18 and 19 year old kids that all of a sudden are getting these endorsements for millions of dollars from companies? And then all those friends and all those people from the neighborhood are in their ear, and they're like, hey, spend this money on this. Let's do this. You know, we see all the time that guys, professional athletes that are in their 20s and 30s, end up losing a bunch of money because they made bad decisions and they hung out with the wrong guys. What's going to happen when we stick all this money in 17 and 18 year old kids' hands and they're on their own and they've got all of those voices in their ear? You know, it's just, you know, there's so many things there. And, you know, I heard something from a radio guy in St. Louis that I respect very much. I totally disagreed with today, because he was talking about all this and he said, players shouldn't have any loyalty. I have no problem with players not playing in bowl games. Why should they care about their teammates? Why should they care about their coaches? It should be all about them and what they do. That's not what sports was supposed to be about. It's supposed to be a brother. It's not. You know, I mean, that's not, you know, that's not what we should be teaching kids, that everything is about me and don't worry about anybody else and you do your thing and you don't worry about your teammates. I mean, that goes against everything that anybody that's ever played a sport has been taught from the time they put on a pad.
Well, and I'll agree with you on that, but I will also disagree in a sense that, once again, it goes back. If the coaches themselves can't stay loyal, why should a player stay loyal? Yes, you should. You should have that loyalty to your teammates, to your brothers, to your sisters. You should be in that group together. But once again, if your leader is not a part of that loyalty and they are doing what is best for them, what's that message? What's that expectation that's set? It's that, hey, he can do it and is out. Why can't I do it? I get what you're saying, because I do agree. I think you should have that camaraderie, that team aspect, that, hey, I'm fighting for you, you're fighting for me. That should be what it's about. But when the top leadership, and you can go down to college presidents as well and say the same exact thing. If they're looking for the next big thing as far as coaching is concerned, why should the student athletes have that same sort of mindset as well? So I think I agree and disagree at the same time. I think the right thing should be that, yes, you play for the name on the front and your brothers and sisters. But I also sit there and go, look, man, if the coaches are sitting there going for, you know, getting paid millions here to getting paid tens of millions over here, and they can do it at the drop of a hat, why can't I sit there and say, look, if this group wants to pay me to go play over there, I'm going to go play over there. And that's what it is. And it's like that in major league sports too. I mean, open it up, but I get what you're saying. I think at the amateur level, it really should be about the love of the sport and the love of the game, but everything is so monetized now that I think we've lost that. And that's something that's really, really hard to sit there and take, considering what we both grew up doing as far as love of sports.
Well, and, you know, what does it teach little kids, too? You know, and I understand it. You know, I do get it, and I understand how money works and you make money. But, you know, I mean, I understand that part of it. But, again, it comes down to personal responsibility. It's past the buck. Well, he's not doing it, so why should I have to do it? Why, you know, why is that my, you know, and, you know, that goes back to a whole other, I mean, we could have a whole conversation about that's part of what's wrong with society, is that nobody wants to take responsibility or look themselves in the eye. He's not doing anything to help anything, so why should I?
Well, you know, that's my mindset at work, is I am not going to tell the people that I work that work for me to do something if I either don't do it, can't do it, or I'm not willing to do it. If I'm going to ask somebody to do something, I have better shown that either I can or I have done it, because I'm not going to put that on somebody else to do if I can't do it myself, or show that I can do it, to say, look, I'm in this with you.
Right.
And when you start to see these coaches and presidents and all that stuff not do that, I think that's where everything kind of gets lost.
It is. Yeah. No, we're not on the same page, and we could have this conversation for hours, so we should probably move on. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how all of that plays out.
It is for sure. So one more thing before we get out of here, I got to talk a little bit about the NFL. We're getting ready to finish up the regular season. It's hard to believe that we're already in week 18 of this season. Still a playoff spot up for grabs. And first off, a really interesting conundrum that the NFL might have to face. Have you seen this about if Jacksonville beats Indianapolis, that Chargers-Raiders game, both teams are in if the Jags beat the Colts. And if they tie, they're both in. But if one team loses, they're out. Like, is chaos about ready to hit the NFL? I mean, I don't think the Jags could beat the Colts, but come on.
You never know. The way this year's gone, who knows? Man, Trevor Lawrence will have the game of his life on Sunday. It's going to be really interesting to see how that all plays out. But, the playoffs this last week's going to be fun. You know, you got that going on in the NFC, AFC. The NFC, you still got a spot. It's basically down to the Saints and the 49ers. See which one of those two teams gets in. And I can't imagine there's a whole lot of people going, man, I want to see the Saints in the playoffs. It's going to be fun. And then, you know, the playoffs this year are going to be – it's going to be chaos because there's no clear-cut favorite in either conference once you get into those games. I mean, I guess you would have to say probably when you look at it, if there's one team that's going to have the advantage probably over everybody, it's probably going to be Green Bay. Because especially in the NFC, because pretty much every other team that's made the postseason is a warm weather team, and they're going to have to go to Lambeau and play in February. So I think the Packers have the advantage. The AFC is completely wide open. I mean, if anybody tries to tell you that whoever has the number one seed, whether it's Tennessee or Kansas City or Buffalo or whoever the hell it ends up being, is a sure lock because they got that number one seed, you're crazy. Because the team that would scare me the most if I'm in either one of those conferences and I don't want to play right now is the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yep. Yeah, they got Chase, they got Burrow. Now both Chase and Burrow, well, Burrow is definitely not playing on Sunday. Ja'Marr Chase might be out on Sunday, mainly just to rest. Joe Mixon did test positive for COVID, so he will be out as well. But they're pretty much kind of set where they're at. And they're playing the Browns, which that's if you want to talk about a disappointment this year, Cleveland Browns are definitely a huge disappointment. I know that hurts you because you're definitely a Browns fan, but you're also wearing a Titans hat, and they're number one in the AFC right now. And they're playing the 4-12 Texans this year. Obviously, the Texans have been a little bit of a spoiler this year in some instances. So that's not an easy win for the Titans. Although Derrick Henry has been cleared to return. He should be back for the playoffs, and that's something that should definitely scare some teams in the AFC. Is you get a healthy Derrick Henry with maybe a chance to play against Houston on Sunday to get himself kind of back into game shape. That's definitely a scary proposition, because then if they get the number one seed, they got the bye, obviously, so he gets another week of rest. The Titans could be scary, but once again, they may not have that number one spot because, you know, the Bills, Bengals, and Chiefs all have a chance to jump up there as well, depending on how things play out this week. So everything up there is up in the air. And I think you're right. I think the Packers, if you're going to talk about a clear-cut favorite in a sense, it's got to be the Packers just because of Lambeau. But, you know, the Buccaneers went in there last year, and they won with the help of some calls. Don't get me wrong. They had some calls, helped. But the Bucs have gone up there as a warm-weather team, have gone up to Lambeau and won that game. It's really – I don't want to sit there and say that it's a sneaky pick. But if Philadelphia ends up playing Green Bay up in Green Bay, I'm not going to sit there and say the Eagles are going to win that game. But that would be one that I would definitely watch because the Eagles are playing at a level that's not great, but they're scrapping out wins. They're finding ways to win. They seem to have done that the last couple of years, you know, when they've been hit with wide receiver injuries and all that kind of stuff, rotating quarterbacks, all that. It just seems like they find ways to win in certain situations. And if Philadelphia were to end up playing Green Bay in the playoffs in Green Bay, that would be one that if the price is right, I might just lay a little bit of money down on it and maybe hope to get a little lucky, because that would be a team that you look at and you go, yeah, they don't have a shot at winning. And then they go out there and they win like a 17-10 game or something like that. That would be one team I would watch if you're talking about going up against Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it. I'm not sure about Jalen Hurts in a big game. Oh. I mean, I know we saw him do it at Alabama, but it's different when you're in Green Bay. But yeah, I can see that. I mean, the NFC, like we said, is so completely up for grabs. Any of those teams, you know, Tampa would be the team you'd look at, but then, you know, with all the injuries and the meltdowns that they've had in the last couple of weeks, I'm not sure what Tampa team is going to show up. Arizona, I mean, if DeAndre Hopkins is back and healthy by the playoffs, Arizona could be a team. I mean, look what they did to Dallas last week. Everybody thought Dallas was going to blow them away in Dallas, and Arizona showed up, and the Cowboys, again, played like the Cowboys in a big game. I mean, if there's a quarterback that you cannot count on when the chips are down, it's Dak Prescott, and he keeps proving it over and over and over again.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And talking about the Cardinals, I think the one piece that gets overlooked in that team and somebody that's a key part of it is James Conner. He's had a resurgence this year. He was a guy that really helped me to the number one place in my fantasy league, and then didn't play the last couple weeks, so I didn't get a chance to win the championship. Finished in third place. Thanks a lot. But James Conner is a big piece of that Cardinals offense. If he can be back and be healthy as well, that's a scary team. They're sitting there at the 5 seed, so they would be one of those underdog kind of teams that maybe could go on a run. You look at over in the AFC, scary to say that the Patriots are definitely a dark horse team. Outside of that, though, I mean, you have to look at the top four and think it's got to be one of those four. If the Patriots do lose in the first week, it's got to be one of those four, because I don't trust the Colts. I don't trust the Chargers. I don't trust the Raiders. I don't trust the Steelers. I don't trust the Ravens. I don't. So, you know, you may not have a clear cut number one. I think you've got four legitimate teams in the AFC that can do it. And then over in the NFC, you got the Packers, and that's about it. I mean, do you trust the Rams? Matthew Stafford hasn't looked great so far. The Bucs are having their own issues, but they still do have Tom Brady. Cowboys, you've already mentioned it. The Cardinals could be that dark horse. Who knows about the Eagles, the 49ers, the Saints? I mean, it's essentially Green Bay and the top four in the AFC, and that's what you should maybe bet on when it comes to who's in the Super Bowl.
You know what, though? I will say, of all those teams in the AFC you talked about, the one team, because of the quarterback they have, if they get in, they could be scary because he's that good, even as young as he is. If the Chargers get in and Justin Herbert is able to stay upright and not get hit a whole lot, he is talented enough that he could get that team. They could make a run.
But he needs the weapons. He's missed guys like Mike Williams. He's missed Eckler. He's missed those guys the last couple weeks, and he can't win games without them. That's the thing. Even if he is upright, who's he going to throw to? Who's he going to, you know, have that safety valve out of the backfield? He needs those guys there to be a guy that can do that. But if those guys are healthy, yes, the Chargers are definitely a team that can put up a lot of points and can make a lot of teams have rough days in the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, health is key. That's what it comes down to. Health is 100% key in this situation.
You know, and like I said, this year has been so crazy. Don't even, I mean, as weird as it sounds to say it, anybody that gets in the AFC, from what we've seen from the Raiders, the Raiders could go on a 2 or 3 week run, and all of a sudden they're playing. I mean, that's just how crazy this year is. I don't expect it to happen, but it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, it's one of those things you expect the favorites to win, but if the underdogs do, you're kind of like, yeah, I can see that being the case. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is anything can happen this year, and it very well possibly could. If you have a Raiders 49ers Super Bowl, forget about it. Oh, man. Yeah, we ran a little long tonight, but we got back. We're back for 2022. We are ready to go. As most of you know, I put out there a couple of weeks ago that I will be calling all the Lindenwood men's volleyball games this year for Lindenwood, their men's home team. They're on the road right now in Stanford. They're playing Stanford right now as we speak. They got a couple games there and a couple games against UC Irvine. Season starts here at home January 22nd, so I'll be on the call for all those home games, so make sure you check that out. I know you've been calling basketball like crazy. You got anything coming up here in the near future as far as basketball is concerned?
I will actually be at Zumwalt East on Friday night doing the Washington Zumwalt East game. So that's where I will be on Friday. And then next week there's like 5 tournaments all over the area. So I think I'm doing like 10 games next week or something crazy like that.
Wow. Wow. Well, you are a busy, busy, busy man. So make sure you check out all those games with Scott Tobin. Does a great job on the call, and he's got some really good games and really good teams to watch as well. So the basketball is rich and good here in really the entire state of Missouri. So make sure you check those games out as well. You got anything else before we head out tonight, man?
I think that was it, man. It was good being back with you.
It was. It was great being back. Unfortunately, the Blues lost tonight. But, you know, it is what it is. They get back on the horse on Friday against the Capitals, and we'll see how that plays out. So we will be back with you guys here very, very soon. We're not sure exactly 100% where we are going to be at just yet. Some of us are still dealing with some health issues at the moment. So we will see how that plays out. But we will be back with you guys very, very soon. Some big names coming up here in the next couple of months and some big things on the way as well. So make sure you check that out. And once again, make sure you check out our website for any of the articles that we're going to be putting out there as well. We're going to be hitting you from all sides with sports coverage here in the year 2022. For Scott Tobin, I am Wags. Thank you guys for joining us. And we will see you guys on the flip side.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.